This talk was given by Degna Chike-Levister at the Zen Center of New York City. Chike is a senior lay student in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org/ZCNYC. Thanks for listening.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Zen Center of New York City. Thank you for joining us this morning. I offer a warm welcome in particular to those joining us for the first time today. It's nice to see you all here. My name is Chike. I am she, they, and I'm a lay senior student in the Mountains and Rivers Order of the Zen Mountain Monastery. I want to begin by expressing my appreciation to my teachers for inviting me to speak today, and to my partner who literally made it possible for me to gather my thoughts for today. Thank you, good people. Love ya. Whenever I'm asked to offer a talk, I ask myself, why do I do this practice? Because I think if I was walking into the door in the doors for the first time, I would go like, why are these people here? What are they doing anyway? So I find new answers every time I ask myself this question. And today, my answer is that I practice Zen Buddhism because I'm committed to trying to live a life that's in harmony. Zen practice is important in my life, and what does that mean to me? That means I sit zazen every day. It means I go on retreats when I can. It means I have a relationship with my teacher. And Zen practice has led me to a great deal of mind-body understanding that's been helpful in my life. And I continue to learn about my own nature. But I would say today I have a pretty satisfying understanding so far, ever evolving, ever the student. And I hope to continue to evolve. Practice has helped me let go of much of the suffering I've experienced in my life. So especially since today, there are new folks, some of who may be experiencing this place for the very first time, I thought it might be helpful to share why I came to this practice, my story about what and who I thought I was that led me to dive into Zen. And maybe a few of you will feel some identification or some resonance. I was listening to a podcast the other day, and the interviewer was interviewing this author, Alex L. And in the podcast, she says that healing is a radical act of self-choosing and self-advocacy. In her book, How We Heal, she explores and unpacks the practice of healing. She says, we see the grind, we see the struggle, we hear the messaging in the world. Everybody wants to hear your struggle story. But how long are we going to struggle through it before we find ease? In my ongoing search for harmony, I am definitely striving for ease. Elle wrote, I'm not really interested in the struggle story. I'm interested in the joy story. I'm interested in the transformation story, in the lightheartedness of it. Because we all know healing can be hard, but it can also give us a really soft place to land. I really like that, a really soft place to land. She writes about naming what we need, holding our boundaries, making time for ourselves. And she does not like the word balance, as in, let's find my work-life balance. She prefers the word harmony, and I like that word too. I prefer that word as well. The interview I heard with her was what inspired this talk. So I identify as an overscheduled academic. And there's this old Zen adage that says, You should sit in meditation for 20 minutes every day, unless you're too busy. Then you should sit for an hour. And I like words, and I like to look things up sometimes. So I found a bunch of definitions of harmony, so I'd like to share three of them. So, noun, an orderly or pleasing combination of elements in a whole, as in the order and harmony of the universe, a relationship in which various components exist together without destroying one another, different kinds of fish living in harmony. A relationship characterized by a lack of conflict or by agreement as of opinion or interest, like family harmony. Another definition. Agreement in action, opinion, feeling, for example, accord. Order or congruity of parts to their whole or to one another. Agreeable sounds in music, any combination of notes sounded simultaneously, or the art or science concerned with the structure and combination of chords. And the last definition, a situation in which people are peaceful and agree with each other, or when things seem right or suitable together, as in racial harmony, good feelings between different races, or domestic harmony, good feelings in the family home. So I'm engage in Zazen as a way of trying to find ease, as a way to ground myself so that I might act harmoniously in my day-to-day life. I like all these definitions, congruity, accord, existing together without destroying one another. I'm partial to music and agreeable sounds. So how am I trying to do this? I begin by spending a good deal of time trying to find this by using my intellect. So this is how I started. Think, okay, so this is me speaking to myself. I'm going to concentrate. I'm going to think really hard. I'm going to develop my concentration. And then I'll understand this, and it's going to lead me there. I'll get it right. But I found that meditation is really the art of just being. And I found this irony, kind of like the bad joke, is that it's like way more simple than I ever thought it was. And it's less about what I understand or how I focus, and more about how do I not distract myself? And I'm distracted often. So I can use the sky as a metaphor for like what I was doing. So, you know, if you remove the clouds from the sky and the airplanes and the helicopters and balloons, that's what I need to do, remove all of that stuff to get it right, to get a clear understanding of what sky is in truth. Do I really have to get rid of those things to understand sky? So I continue to learn what's really important is where I put my attention. It's not about my knowledge, my understanding, my knowing. I don't have to understand it. I don't even have to think about it. I've learned some things about myself in the context of Zen practice. I'm a work in progress. But I've identified that I have this pile of character traits and habits that I've built up over a lifetime. These have come mostly from situations I found myself in that for whatever reason I needed to adapt in order to be well or safe or feel loved. And I suppose you might characterize what I'm referring to here as CPTSD, complex PTSD. Some of these habits I certainly still work with. So, for example, I'm a bit of a perfectionist. Or maybe not a bit of a perfectionist. But I've discovered that that trait, for me, came from a chaotic childhood when I was trying to impose some sort of order on chaos. And I was a child with little control over my life. So perfection was a way for me to please the adults around me who were quite literally in control of my life. And that feeling of powerlessness led me later in my life to recognizing that I'm a bit of a control freak. So through years of working on myself, I've discovered that my control thing is because powerlessness made me feel very, very anxious. And sometimes made me feel the need to panic, my trauma response. Rezma Menakem, in his book, My Grandmother's Hands, says this about trauma, and I found this incredibly helpful. He says, trauma is not a flaw or a weakness. It is a highly effective tool of safety and survival. Trauma is also not an event. Trauma is the body's protective response to an event or series of events that it perceives as potentially dangerous. This perception may be accurate or entirely imaginary. Trauma always happens in the body. It is a spontaneous protective mechanism used by the body to stop or thwart further or future potential damage. So I used to consider my trauma responses as deep, deep flaws, defects of character, if you will. Trauma is not a flaw or a weakness. It's a highly effective tool of safety and survival. Rezma Menakem. I thought control would help me feel less anxious. But this didn't work out for me because I found myself feeling like I needed to control more and more and more and more and more in order not to lose my stuff. There was literally no end to my desire to control because I thought that control, controlling my mind, controlling my body, would lead to ease. If I just got it all right, then I could relax. But I could never get it all right. I didn't run out of stuff. I thought I was suffering because I wasn't working hard enough. I just need to get better at it. I'm not doing it right. I thought I could create ease by force of will. And it turned out it was an exhausting desire trap for me. The first noble truth in Buddhism is desires are inexhaustible. And the four noble truths, especially for those of you who walked into the temple for the first time today, I'll just say the four noble truths structure the entire teachings of the Buddha, containing its many other principles. As scholars have said, the elephant's footprint contains the footprint of all the other animals. The origin of suffering is egoistic craving, that's the first truth. And attachment to this, that's the second one. And the third, there's a way to the cessation of suffering. And the fourth is, the way is the Eightfold Path. And that's what we practice in Buddhism. The Eightfold Path is right understanding, right thinking, right speech, right attitude, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. So I learned perfectionism as a way to please the adults in my life and the desire to control as a way to deal with the chaos of my childhood. Okay, so wow, that was actually really, really important for me as a child. There was a wisdom in the young me. And all this actually did help me survive a challenging upbringing. Wisdom in the young me, something innate. Before I went to college, before I went to elementary school. Right? And as an adult, I didn't realize this continuation of my behavior, my people-pleasing and perfectionism, that I was trying to control everything and everyone within an inch of its life. I didn't realize I was doing that. Practice helped me look at myself and see my habits, my practice, what I was doing. I was anxious. I was suffering from physical symptoms and panic attacks. I couldn't understand why I wasn't happy. I felt like a failure in my life. And it seemed the harder I worked on being perfect and trying to make things perfect for those closest to me, the more I struggled. And to the outside world, things looked good. I'm just another brown girl of mixed ancestry who grew up in poverty. And at the time I first found Zen, I was the mom of a beautiful young human being. I had a life partner who was being supportive in many ways. I had a successful career as a social justice lawyer. I was helping others, feeling good about that. But internally, I was a shit show of panic and self-disdain. And there wasn't an end to my desire to control. And I discovered in practice that precisely for this reason, that there could be no end ever, I was like asking myself, I'm sitting, how's this working for me? Is this working? And it wasn't working too well. So when I became a formal Zen student and began working with a teacher, these four noble truths gave me tools, something to work with, the possibility of reframing my lived experience in the process of discerning how my mind works. My strong attachment to my desire to control was quite literally ruining my life. And so if I wanted something different, I really had no choice but to try something different. And these four truths, they made a kind of intellectual sense to me, too. So I had something to work toward. That kind of makes sense. What? Okay, let me explore that more. Let me get into that more. And I found myself in a community of people who seemed serious about this path of liberation. Even though I didn't really understand what it all was, I also felt welcomed. So spirituality, Zen, is about what's actually happening. The essential dilemma of human existence is that we don't have much control over our experiences, nowhere near as much control as we think we do. And this can be kind of unsettling, especially for a control freak. And so it's come to me that it's my experience now that it's not so much thinking as being the recipient of thinking and then responding to the thoughts that come into my mind. And this was scary for a while. If I'm not thinking, who's thinking? This is going to be unsettling, right? But it also can be liberating, too, because I found that I can do away with a lot of guilt and shame and conflict. I don't really own so much of that. I don't really own so very much in this life, period. And I'm not wholly responsible for all these things that occur and all these situations I find myself confronted with. I am responsible for my part, for what I do, for how I act, for how I choose to respond. So for me, it's been about how I choose to respond to what I find in front of me. I am not generating my experiences. I'm a recipient of them. Yamada Koan Zenshin, or Koan Yamada, was a Japanese Buddhist who was the leader of the Sambo Kyodan lineage of Zen Buddhism, the Dharma heir of his teacher, Yasutani Hakuan Ryoko. Yamada was appointed the leader of the Sambo Kyodan in the 1970s and continued to differentiate the lineage from other Japanese Zen traditions by de-emphasizing the separation between lay people and the ordained, just as his teacher Yasutani had done. He said, "The practice of Zen is forgetting the self in the act of uniting with something." I like that. The practice of Zen is forgetting the self in the act of uniting with something. Forgetting the self, letting go of the self, of that which grabs hold or pushes away. Letting go of the self, of that which grabs hold or pushes away. So self isn't something or someone who grabs hold or pushes away. Self is grasping or pushing away. Self isn't something or someone who grabs hold or pushes away. Self is grasping or pushing away. When there is no grasping and there is no pushing away, there is no longer the experience of self. I think everyone has had this experience. You're immersed in something, you're into it. You lose time, right? You're involved, you're doing something creative, you're using your imagination. You're in a flow. Have you noticed yourself is gone? You're just in it. No yesterday, no worries about tomorrow. You just forget yourself. You're just doing. Great musicians can do this too. They practice for hours and hours, right? And they do their scales and they do their practice with their groups and all that. And in the performance, they forget. It's just the music, this like living, spiritual experience of sound and sensation. No self-consciousness, just music, harmony, deep listening, connection with others, if they're playing with others. And we feel this. I think we feel this. We know this in our mind, body. It's ironic that in practice we think we should be seeking peace or something, striving for it, looking for it, thinking about where to look for it, thinking about how best to look for it. We do this, we're conditioned to do this, right? So beginning instruction, some of you had today, right? We begin with the breath. And suddenly we can be like really self-conscious about breathing. Like we forgot how to breathe. Like, oh no, is my breath too long? Is it too short? What do I count? You know, like we know how to breathe. And then some of us start thinking about breathing. Okay, am I breathing the right way? Yada, yada, yada. The great Zen master Dogen Zenji said, if you are unable to find the truth right where you are, where else do you expect to find it? Can we find it out there? What do you think about that? Seeing our condition, seeing our own reality, presence in the moments, our attention on where we are and what we're doing. That's meditation. That's spirituality. That's Zen practice. If we're using meditation to hide from our reality, we're missing it. Seeing is where we must begin. Ask those good questions. Who am I? What am I? How does my mind work? What even is a self? Good questions. Good questions. Whatever we find is our life. Accept it. Each moment, I guess I think about it this way, each moment is like a new birth, new potentiality. Profound acceptance is not pushing back against life. It's hard to get to the deeper parts of a spiritual practice if we're pushing back or holding on to like and dislike. This push-pull we do this because we see life as something we're trying to negotiate instead of seeing it as something we are. My life is not here to suit me. It just is. And I have to figure out how to harmonize with what is. This is what I try to practice. Suzuki Roshi was a Soto Zen monk and teacher who helped popularize Zen Buddhism in the United States. And he's renowned for founding the first Buddhist monastery outside of Asia, the Tassajara Zen Mountain Center. Suzuki Roshi founded the San Francisco Zen Center. And a book of his teachings, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, is one of the most popular books on Zen and Buddhism in the West. He asked and answered this question, which I love. Question: how much ego do you need? Answer: just enough so that you don't step in front of a bus. We begin at the beginning with what's called beginner's mind. What's beginner's mind? Beginner's mind is what it sounds like. It's a term used to describe the mindset of a true beginner. And when you're new to something, you don't know anything about it. Your mind is open and you adopt this unique mindset. And sometimes in our sophistication, we forget that we have this capacity. In this beginner's mindset, you are free of preconceptions of how anything works. You are free of expectations about what will happen. You are filled with curiosity to understand things more deeply. And you're open to a world of possibilities, since you don't yet know what is or is not possible. Think back to like what it's like when little kids learn about something. They're overflowing with questions, and their imaginations run wild. What if that could fly? What if, you know, it's fascinating to watch. And they ask both simple and complicated questions. Some are obvious and some are profound. Things you never considered. I was getting a ride home from a funeral service of a dear friend a few weeks ago. My colleague's three children were in the car. And the kids, my child is grown. So her children were young. And the car ride was an hour and a half out in Long Island, coming back to the city. And it was just a delight. These kids were asking questions about what about this and what about that? And I can't imagine if it. And I was just like, I'd forgotten, because I spend so much time around adults all the time, like how amazing it is to spend a couple of hours around kids who are like inquisitive and have like, you know, thoughts about how the world ought to work and what's going to be possible in their future and yours, you know? They're natural at it. We're natural at this because as kids, we're always beginners at something. And as we get older, it's easy to lose touch with these qualities of mind that once came so naturally. So, you know, knowledge can be a bit of a curse sometimes. Many people spend their lives trying to become experienced in a field, an expert in a subject area, or skilled at a craft. I'm guilty, totally, totally. I certainly have. And so beginner's mind seems, in a sense, to run in opposition to that. So because of this, the idea can feel a little bit uncomfortable. Why should I abandon what I know about the world? Even for a moment, isn't it better to have expertise, experience, knowledge, and understanding as my foundational starting point, right? And experience is indeed a wonderful thing. It often helps us do things at a higher level, but knowledge and understanding of how things work can also prevent us from seeing clearly. What's right in front of us can get in the way of seeing what's right in front of us. Shunryu Suzuki says, if your mind is empty, it's open to everything. In the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities, but in the expert's mind, there are few. So I'm feeling more easeful these days. I still have problems. I'm never going to run out. I don't want to run out. What would I do with my time? But I have so much more capacity to deal with them without freaking out. I don't have panic attacks. Practice has been a core part of my soul healing work. It has made it possible for me to make friends with my fears and learn what they're trying to teach me. I continue to learn the ways in which my fears are trying to help. I continue to learn about where fear lives in my body. It's not just my mind, it's body work too. Resmaa Menakem says in his book, My Grandfather's Hands, Racialized Trauma and the Pathway to Mending Our Hearts and Bodies, that we have a soul nerve. I'm a nurse too, so I looked this up. So it's your vagus nerve. It's the 10th cranial nerve. And I think that understanding literally where this lives in our bodies can be really, really helpful, which is why I spend time here. So the 10th cranial nerve starts at the part of your brain that connects to your spinal cord. And it splits off into many branches that extend down through the neck into our vital abdominal organs. I don't know about you, but I'm kind of a person when I sometimes will get this feeling of anxiety and my stomach will just do things, you know, I get nauseous or it'll cramp, you know, something like that's my vagus nerve, right? So to our abdominal organs. So the vagus nerve is the longest of our 12 cranial nerves. It's connected to the parts of our brain that doesn't use logical reasoning, but it does help us navigate our way in the world, right? So what Menakem calls the lizard brain. It manages everything that automatically occurs in our body. We never have to think about it in order for it to work. It regulates your heartbeat, the exchange of oxygen, of your lungs, digestion, those kinds of things, right? So in his book, Menakem offers a trauma-informed, resilience-promoting guide to addressing trauma, including racialized trauma in people with white skin, those with dark skin, as well as police officers. And he directs material toward each group, as well as toward all Americans, all of whom, he says, suffer from racialized trauma growing up in this country. And I found his work helpful. And we've taken up his healing work together in our Beyond Fear Differences work here in the MRO. So I'll wrap up here by trying to summarize a little bit of this all by saying harmony is here. For the recording, I'm pointing at myself. And harmony is here. I'm pointing at the Sangha. Our answer for finding ease in moving through our complicated lives is never going to be outside of ourselves. Self-care is an act of community care. I believe self-care is an act of community care. It allows us to show up abundant and fully present. It allows us to show up authentically instead of performing or acting resentfully or code-switching all the time. In our overstimulated and overstimulating world, I consider stillness and silence a radical act. I teach at a social justice law school, and I start every class with 10 minutes of stillness. And I don't talk Zen. People can do whatever they want. They can put their head down on the table, but we're just still. And this is a community of people who all have their fists in the air because they want to do something to make the world a better place. And I say, all the time, silence is a radical act. Self-care is an act of community care. paraphrasing El, who I began with, we see this grind, we see this struggle, we hear the messaging in the world. We're feeling and listening to each other's struggle. And this is important. It's part of the journey to be there for one another, listen to each other's struggle. But we can also get interested in the joy story too. Can we get interested in the joy story? How about sharing the path of transformation? Finding the lightheartedness of it. Noticing the places of ease and things that work for us. I've tried this morning to share with you a little bit of my joy story, and my story continues to unfold. Healing is certainly challenging sometimes, but we can also find a really soft place to land. I've found a soft place here in my Zen practice, in this place, in this community, with all of you. So, thank you for your attention today. I appreciate it. And try to remember, we already have everything we need. We just begin right where we are. Yes?
Thank you for listening. To find out more about the Zen Center of New York City's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit our website at zmm.org/ZCNYC.